Welcome to the Pint and Click podcast. I'm Dave. I'm here with Joel and Jamie and Tony. And we're going to talk about A Wrinkle in Time, the movie, maybe a little bit about the book as well. Who knows? But we all saw the movie recently. I loved it. I thought the casting was great, especially for the kids. It's hard to get good child actors.
Oh, my gosh.
But
yeah.
The three of them were all great. They were all great in their roles. They were all great. They were all different.
Right.
They were great together. They had chemistry. They had all these things. The witches were fun, but these are big personalities. Mm-hmm. Like Oprah, it's a little bit of a distraction. But finding these kids, whoever found these kids did a fantastic job, because I loved watching them throughout the whole movie.
Yeah, I like the movie on the grounds that it was, again, just kind of like a slice of a book that maybe doesn't ordinarily translate into a movie and is extremely visual. And yet the plot was also kind of very much this character, inner landscapes and inner conflicts that were happening. And you're seeing them on the screen. So taking modern CG graphics and just, I don't know, expanding this fairly old book and turning it into something that was like a journey that I could, you know, relate to. I don't know. I think like maybe I'm not like the target audience necessarily, but I really liked it. Yeah.
That's exactly how I felt. I felt that I was not the target audience for this movie, but I definitely feel that the theme itself is universal, but this movie is directed towards somewhere else. But I thought that you mentioned the expanded landscape. I felt that this showed the inner voyage of, or the inner change going on. I thought that the whole ability to, because the movie talks about traveling vast distances through time and space, and how often in adolescence does it feel that you've traveled a huge amount in a short amount of time. And I thought that was a great metaphor, and they played that up really well in the movie. And both showing it happening, you know, obviously in the literal sense, but also within the personal development side of that.
I think I'm going to be the sole hater here. And I was the one who was super excited about the movie. I really wanted to do this podcast on it. And when I saw it, I was so disappointed. And I think that's what happens when you love a book a lot and then haven't interacted with it in a couple of decades. And then I saw the movie. And I think part of it was that it was a lot of departures from the book. So, you know, there's always that part where, you know, obviously a book, especially a book like Wrinkle in Time, can't translate directly into a film. But I felt very much like two things, that a lot of stuff was diluted and then amplified. It was made, I think a lot of the points that were made more subtly in the book were like shouted very loudly. I think one of the difficulties also is that the dialogue in the book, when I was re-listening to the book after having watched the movie, is stilted. A lot of the dialogue in the book does not sound natural. And I think part of that is the way that Charles Wallace, the young boy who's very precocious, speaks. And when I read it, it didn't seem that unrealistic, or it didn't sound so insufferable. But when I was listening to it in an audiobook, I was like, even hearing the narrator like read it out loud, it like grated at me. And then I think in the movie, the dialogue definitely also grated at me as well. So I think I had really high expectations, especially because of all the different people that were casting in it. And then I was really sad. But my friend who I saw it with didn't have any association with the book, and she loved the movie too. So I think maybe it's like my nostalgia for the book and that time period in my life. So
that could be.
Yeah.
I thought that was a good part of the movie, that it gives you almost this like philosophy or this moral story in addition to like a kids traveling through space and time to rescue their father. It kind of gives you this other thing about like seeing and coming to terms with, you know, emotions and thoughts and what you really want out of your life and your journey and things like that, and the connections between you and the people you care most about and things like that. And I think that the way that they showed it in the movie was provocative enough that I did pick up the book, and I realized in reading it that, yeah, a lot of these things are super subtle, and I'm using the imagery from the movie to help inform my reading now of the book. But I think that the creepy parts of like, so like the child actor, like Charles Wallace and things like there are certain parts of the book where like it gets dark, it gets creepy. I think they did a pretty good job, but the movie, I wasn't sold on it right away. I think it really took a long time to develop, and I was actually kind of falling asleep for like the first part of the movie, because I didn't know where it was going. I didn't have the standard like plot points to like inform where this movie was going to go. Yeah, I don't know. I think it kind of snuck up on me in that way though. So.
Yeah. I feel like the beginning definitely was a slow burn in the movie. And I think part of the difficulty is that in the book, there's more cohesion of what each thing means. And in the movie, I feel like we set up this cosmic, like, good versus evil type of situation. But the world building is thinner. And so it's harder to understand what's actually at stake, what the nature of, like, the it is, mm-hmm. and things like that. And reading the book when I was younger, definitely, and then rereading it now, it was so creepy. It, like, scared me so much. And that sense of, like, horror and dread was not there in the movie. And I think it definitely seemed more like, oh, this is a kid's movie type of a thing, but it didn't have that psychological, like, so much detail on mind control and things like that that are present in the book. I think I'm just going to be a curmudgeon and be like, it's not like the book, and then be grumpy about it. But I think if you just went into it, just seeing it as a movie, you would not be, like, thinking about all these things at all. Sure.
So I have a kind of a fun story. We're talking about the target audience in the first half was a little slow. I saw it. I was by myself in a row in the theater, and there was a family behind me, including I think it was three little kids. And the first half of the movie, they were whispering, they were talking, they were asking questions. Who's that? What's going on? Like, but the second half of the movie, they were dead silent. They were totally absorbed. They were into everything that was going on. Until, again, at the last 2 or 3 minutes, like, they started to shake loose and ask questions. And, well, I would have rather seen Black Panther, one little girl said. But, but, yeah, the beginning when they're setting up the characters maybe took too long. And the end, which I thought was when the movie finally got its hooks in me and I was I was paying attention alongside these, you know, small children. And we were all into the movie together. I think it really delivered on that. And I think it delivered visually, especially, like, when they're on the planet and there's, you know, the beach with all the extras and all the colors and all the umbrellas and towels and all that. And things get confusing and things are uncomfortable and all the people are, like, way too close together, like these towels on the ground. And it's like, oh, I don't want to be here with all these people. Like, I think they really did a good job in that last half, that last third of the movie. But I don't know, in the middle when they're on the planet, there's the flowers. It's just like, whatever. Yeah. I've seen special effects before. There was no sense of wonder in the middle, but there was a sense of panic or dread at the end. It would have been nice if they had developed that contrast more, but I feel like they just kind of didn't.
Yeah, it felt like it was trying really hard to create, like, a Wizard of Oz type of another world. And this is, like, anything, every step you take in this foreign environment will be a new discovery. But
it stops having a lot of meaning if they can switch the walls like they were paper. You know, it stops having, like, the suspension of disbelief can only go so far.
But nonetheless, I liked it a lot. I liked, as I said, the kids a lot, even in the beginning when they're at school getting in trouble or when Charles Wallace is yelling about how great Meg is. And I'm like, I'm just as embarrassed as she is in this moment. Like, I really felt that. So, like, the beginning was pretty good. The ending I thought was great. The middle, maybe not so much. But on the whole, I enjoyed it. I would certainly recommend it to other adults. Judging by the children behind me, I would recommend it to children as well. But
yeah, I have a feeling that maybe this movie will, and this is obviously just conjecture, but, like, maybe the movie is going to impact a lot of people like the book did, and maybe it's going to get a lot more people to read the book. And I feel like it's whatever it was for people when they read it way back when, I feel like this movie is a great, almost like eye-opener. Like, it's a movie that has the strong themes and even language that, like, a visual language that kind of supersedes whatever kind of story they're trying to tell. It almost, like, tells its own thing just through this journey that is led by kids, and it's them going to essentially rescue the father. So it's like that in and of itself, I feel like, is it's a Disney-worthy, you know, cornerstone, touchstone.
I wonder if they're planning on making any sequels, because she wrote 4 books in the Time Quartet. And then there's another series of books that are about Calvin, the neighbor, his family. So there's potentially, you know, depending on how lucrative and stuff this movie is, there's a lot of different spinoffs, although some have to do with, like, siblings that don't appear in the movie and things like that. But one thing I thought was interesting when I was looking at reviews and stuff is that the movie wasn't really well reviewed by critics. But one thing that Ava DuVernay had said was that, like, this is, like, a love letter to watchers. And one review was saying, this isn't a movie for critics, like, the things that critics look for. It's not for them. But, like, general audiences going to it have been loving it. So I thought that was interesting. My last thought about it is that One of the things I liked about the book was that it pits all these extraordinary things alongside things that make the world very ordinary. Like in the book, Mrs. Watson and all of them, they don't look like these beautiful, you know, like Reese Witherspoon or Oprah, like these magical, mystical creatures. The way Mrs. Watson, who's played by Reese Witherspoon in the movie, is described made me think that in the movie she would look something like Radagast the Brown from The Hobbit, or like if you think of like Miracle Max from Princess Bride, his wife, like very haggard, like old, bedraggled in a bunch of clothing and things like that. So I think that all these magical things were offset by things that made people look kind of seem not so special. And that goes along with the themes of the book about how Meg feels. Mm-hmm. And even Charles Wallace in the book, everyone else thinks he's stupid because he doesn't speak to other people except for his family. Whereas in the movie, of course, you know, because they want to make it visually interesting and you need to amp up all this stuff, that ordinariness was kind of pushed away and everything was aesthetically pleasing and big and beautiful to look at. But I think that kind of lost why I identified with the book in the first place.
Yeah, I suppose the movie went for an image, it went for a presence, and it achieved that. But, you know, that is not necessarily the same image and presence that the book went to create. I feel like the witches are pretty because they need to be. Like, these are the good guys, small children. Like, so let's make them women with beautiful outfits and
like bejeweled
extravagant faces. Makeup. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, again, like Wizard of Oz, you know.
Sure. Yeah.
That you're directed to know what side they're on just by looking at them.
Yeah.
And it's just the medium of the movie versus the medium of the book. The book is, you can be more subtle and you can do things in a movie. You really have people's attention for a certain amount of time and you really have to, you know, obviously it's a visual format. So you really
make that impression count.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I hate to put you on the spot, but was it Mrs. Who only speaks in other people's words?
Yes, who played by Mindy Kaling.
Right. In the movie, how did that contrast, those who reread the book with, because the movie is a lot of new stuff. Like she quotes Outcast, I believe, at one point.
She does phrases still sometimes from writing, but I think mostly it's in a different language.
Okay.
And so it'll be in German, and then it'll translate, and then it might be something that's from a famous author, but it might not. It might just be a phrase in German.
Yeah, and it's more like what we think is like quotations, not Hamilton, you know.
Yeah.
And then she also speaks not in quotations in the book as well. Like she will say something normally and then include a quote.
So it's not
solely quotations.
Yeah, that was something that puzzled me sitting in the theater. Like, I have no idea what this character said in the book because like all of this is new. All of this is fresh and didn't exist at the time that the book was written.
And I think it was great in both formats that it helped you think about how language is kind of another lens that you're looking through these meanings. And again, it's being meta in that sense that you almost feel like an alien when you're watching this film. That's one of the great feelings I think I got coming away from the movie was like you feel strange because there's so many other types of communication going on the screen and on the page, even if it's just a language being written out that you don't understand. And, you know, you can look at it and get some kind of meaning, but thankfully it's translated in the next phrase by Mrs. Who, you know? So
sure.
I thought that was a really nice touch that they kept it in some form that was understandable, that translated.
Do you think with all the different types of technology we have now that movies like this that we previously thought of as being like, you can't make this into a movie. There's no way you can make this into a movie. Like, do you think all those barriers can be crossed if we're thinking about like in the realms of fantasy and sci-fi? Or is there still like, are there still things that we can't do?
So I think it depends on a number of things. Watchmen was famously called unfilmable, and Zack Snyder put out a Watchmen movie. And I think it works, but it cut whole storylines, you know, from the graphic novel. And it, not so much the special effects, but like it had to be reduced characters to more manageable archetypes. It had to do things like that. So there are books and graphic novels and stories out there that are maybe unfilmable because they're so subtle and or so complex.
Yeah, and like the narrative is not plot driven and things like that.
That it's hard to put. And also like movies are 2 hours. Like if it's too long, you're not going to film it. You're not going to film most of the time. I mean, Lord of the Rings, I guess, stands out, but you're not going to show a 3.5 hour movie or an 8 hour movie or something absurd like that. You need this reducible mm-hmm. characteristic to the story.
However, I think it's being shown now that you can serialize mm-hmm. the movie.
Sure. Yeah, all these mini series.
Or if you look at, you know, It, mm-hmm. you know, they took the first half of the book.
The book mm-hmm.
Or they took half of the book, half not the first book, half, but half of the book, and then told one story, and then they'll tell the rest of the story later on. I think that...
Oh, I didn't know that. Mm-hmm. I didn't know. I haven't seen itself, the movie, so I didn't know that.
Says, well, you know, we'll come back in like 17 years, or, you know, they're going to film it soon enough, but I think it'll be a fast forward in time in the movie to when they're adults.
It was at the end of the It movie, it says It, like a late title mm-hmm. card, but then it says chapter one. And you're like, oh, there must be a chapter two.
I did
two
not
coming.
Know that.
Right. So maybe you're right, Joel. Like, there's mechanics you can implement to confound the traditional two-hour movie.
If they managed to make three movies out of The Hobbit, which is, what is it, 160 pages
or so?
Yeah, I think they can serialize anything.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So why not, you know, serialize a 776-page or 800, mm-hmm. depending what edition of It mm-hmm. you're looking at. Actually, no, I'm sorry. I'm underselling. It's over 1,000 pages.
Yeah, right.
So, but if you can take mm-hmm. over 1,000 pages and make movies out of that, I think.
And then there's like, I was thinking like Joyce, you know, if you tried to like do like Ulysses or, you mm-hmm. know, something
Stream
like that.
Yeah.
Stream of Consciousness.
Yeah.
But my latest like fandom has been like The Magicians, which is like an excellent self-aware book. Mm-hmm. And they turned it into an excellent self-aware sci-fi series mm-hmm. that like will be self-referential of the world of fantasy TV, so it knows about Game of Thrones and it talks about things like Harry Potter.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And they even use the line like, well, that's like if Hermione Granger never went to Hogwarts.
Right.
You know? Mm-hmm. So like if you, as long as you're aware of the medium you're in and you try mm-hmm. to make it true, if it's self-referential as a book, then taking that and whatever media you're choosing, like you have to kind of, what's the spirit mm-hmm. of the text? And
for ones that are really like voice or style driven.
Yeah.
And things.
So
yeah.
You never know. Yeah, maybe there'll be a VR Ulysses mm-hmm. or something.
It's a great point, though, with the stream of consciousness. Mm-hmm. When you're reading a novel that's known for its specific structure or style, mm-hmm. and then you translate it into a movie, I think a success will be to, obviously, how can you translate that structure and
mm-hmm.
style?
Mm-hmm.
But if you manage to do that,
you
will be the next great director.
Or, sure.
You know,
if the payoff is so much higher.
Yeah.
And if you fail, then big deal. Like, you know, just it's a clunker. How many clunkers are out there?
Sure.
And I think having things like streaming services, being able to make whatever amount of episodes you want to do and not just whatever network television tells you.
Right.
Like, opens
it doesn't
it up.
Have to be 22 half-hour episodes anymore. It can be eight episodes. Mm-hmm. It can be 30 episodes.
You know, like Sherlock, you could have like 3-hour-and-a-half episodes of stuff. You can.
So the environment is very conducive mm-hmm. to trying.
Yeah.
And if more people are trying, some more people are going to hit.
Yeah.
And so I think that I don't know if there is ever an unfilmable script inside of a story.
So it took both those things, maybe. It took loosening of the traditional, the rigid mm-hmm. structure of a two-hour movie and mm-hmm. a 22-episode half-hour TV show. And it took the CG mechanics to actually mm-hmm. make these things like, you know, armies of battle droids or, you know, flying, whispering flowers or, mm-hmm. you know, enormous armies mm-hmm. at the end of The Hobbit or Lord of the Rings to mm-hmm. maybe this is, we've arrived. Anything is mm-hmm. filmable.
Right. And speaking of that, you're bringing the Lord of the Rings and Wrinkle of Time near each other, I will connect them with the Return of the King had about how many endings? Like seven endings?
It kept dimming. You kept thinking you're going to get up. Nope, you're still there.
And the Wrinkle of Time kind of felt the same mm-hmm. way. Like, you know, this happens, and then this is resolved, and then that happens. And it just kept on going. I'm like, this is the most endings I've seen since Return of the King. So I thought that was pretty funny. But one thing that I noticed when I was watching the when you go to the movies and you see a bunch of the trailers, recently there is a lot of press amidst all the trailers that had Ava DuVernay talking about how much mm-hmm. fun she made Wrinkle in Time. And it impressed me that, and of course Chris Pine saying, oh, I loved everybody mm-hmm. and all these actors. And of course people are going to say that because it's professional and that's what mm-hmm. you do. But mm-hmm. I thought Ava showed, if I look half as happy doing what I do, what she was there with her mom, she was there with mm-hmm. it, and she did a rap, and she was talking to the crowd, and they kind of, mm-hmm. talking to the crowd, I mean the whole cast,
mm-hmm.
and extras and whatever, the people that were there, and it just seemed that they were into it, And that impressed me. You could have that much fun making a movie.
Yeah.
Because you read some horror stories about like people that hated working with this person or making this film. And it just seemed like there was a fun movie to be made. So that alone made me want to go see it to see if the synergy that people working together would create something more than just people in a movie or whatever. It would create a message or whatnot. So I thought that was a really interesting aspect. And I'm sure, obviously, that's what they intended by releasing that. But sometimes I feel like putty in the hands of all the studios.
Yeah, sure.
But, you know, then why do you pay your ticket and sit in the seats?
Right.
Exactly.
You know? So I thought that was a great view of the behind the scenes of the movie.
I felt the same way. In all articles and stuff, she was so passionate about this. And she's like, she was offered Black Panther, you know? And she chose this. And she was... Yeah. I just feel like it was such a big deal that this movie is coming out, and instead of having like white characters like in the book, that people of color and, you know, Black girls can see like, oh, there's someone who looks like me starring in this huge movie. And I think that's like so important. And yeah, I was also suckered in by that preview. And I was like, yeah, I am. I'm on board with that.
And I've also, it's been a while since I wished I had another first name, but I really wished I had the first name of Storm. Storm Reed is the actress.
That'd be pretty good.
Just, whenever I see the name Storm, it's a great name.
So that's Wrinkle in Time. Most of us recommend it, not all of us, but...
I would still recommend
it. You still recommend it?
I would still recommend it,
you just didn't enjoy it.
I personally didn't enjoy it, but I think those are all Jamie things.
Okay, I understand.
I would still recommend it to other people.
How about the book? Does the book hold up? Do you recommend that as well?
I would still definitely recommend the book.
Yeah, I'd say check it out. Yeah.
Wonderful. I haven't read it since grade school or junior high or whatever, so that's good to hear.
But it does not sound contemporary. It definitely sounds like the 70s or early 80s or whenever it came out. It sounds like, oh, you can tell if an 8-year-old was reading, it would be like, oh, this is like not historical fiction, but this, the way they're speaking and stuff, this is clearly not a book written now.
All right. So that's A Wrinkle in Time. We'll see you next time.